The following is a special presentation of Snake Tree Media.
Was the podcast before Christmas, the third of its kind, and the State of the Union is what we have on our minds. So we picked up the phone and we called in a friend to celebrate Christmas with PS Nation's Glenn. We'll talk about gaming, the good and the bad, the games we enjoyed playing, and the games we wish we had. Holiday greetings from you guys, and a Sonic sit rep too. So grab a cup of eggnog or pour your favorite brew. I'm Commander Fury, sending holiday wishes to ya. Keep your feet wet and your powder dry. Merry Christmas, hoo-yah!
Hey, this is John, one of the directors of Urgent Fury, wishing everybody in the community a happy holidays and a safe new year.
Hey, KOH Lucan here, wishing a very special Merry Christmas to all those men and women serving in our armed forces and their families. Thank you for all you do to protect this great country of ours.
This is Bandit 99, wishing everyone at UF a Merry Christmas and a happy new year from the 101st Screaming Eagles.
Hoo-yah! I'm Commander Claymore Fury. Thank you for calling the Urgent Frequency Operation 1225 Holiday Greeting Hotline. To help me explain how this whole thing works, my friends at NORAD have secured a private connection with the only guy around here fatter and jollier than me, with a message directly from its Snowbrook Center headquarters in the North Pole. It's Santa Claus!
Hoo-yah! Claymore, regardless of how you celebrate the holiday season, or even if you celebrate the holiday season, there's probably someone out there to whom you'd like to send a special message of good tidings. Whether it's the Urgent Fury community, your clan, or just a message to the very special men and women serving in the military, the Urgent Frequency Operation 1225 Holiday Greeting Hotline allows you to do just that. To explain more, I've brought along one of my favorite employees, Vincent the Elf.
Hey, yo, you can call me Vincent, but I prefer Vinny, just like the lady, know what I mean? Forget about it. So this whole thing is pretty simple, right? At the tone, leave your name or gamer tag, your affiliation, like, you know, like a clan or a company or something like that, along with your holiday greeting, and we'll share it with the world on the 2010 Urgent Frequency Podcast before Christmas. And may the best man win.
No, Vincent, it's not really a competition.
Except for that bum in a dub. May he drop dead, that naughty son of a bitch.
Vincent!
Wait for the tone and leave your message. It's really that easy, folks. Now remember, if you leave a message, it becomes the property of Urgent Fury Holdings, LLC, and is subject to rebroadcast. Thanks again from me, Santa, and Vincent, and everybody else here at Urgent Fury. Happy holidays.
I am Commander Claymore Fury for UrgentFury.com. The brave men and women in our nation's armed forces made a commitment to protect us and our freedoms. Many will come home with missing limbs, severe burns, or traumatic brain injuries. The Wounded Warrior Project was created to help and support these injured heroes through programs and services that help make their recoveries that much easier. Regardless of your position on the war, our wounded veterans deserve our support. To learn more, call 1-877-TEAM-WWP. That's 1-877-832-6997. Or visit WoundedWarriorProject.org. Hoo-yah!
Tester season finale, available now from the PlayStation Network. 12 were chosen. Now only 3 face the final challenge. Scooter.
This is it. We're going to our final battle.
Gamer.
The game could be anyone's. Anyone.
Cheska.
My heart's pumping. It's racing.
Who will be the next PlayStation tester?
Definitely being put in a cage.
You'll have to complete 4 levels of gameplay inspired by the upcoming Killzone 3.
The breathing of everyone you could tell was fear.
This feeling is like straight out of a horror movie.
Go!
They're going to finish the competition and I'm still going to be here.
I'm like, yes, something I can excel at.
Crap, my heart sinks. I don't know what to do.
Wow. This is it. I love Killzone. I've got this.
Literally right next to each other.
We are neck and neck and I can't breathe.
I run up to the end of a cliff. I'm lost.
All I can do at this point is plow through.
Download the season finale this week from the PlayStation Store and be automatically entered into this week's grand prize drawing for a 46-inch Sony 3D Bravia television and a Tester Limited Edition PS3 signed by this season's panelists. Details available on thetester.com. Download the season finale, available now from the PlayStation Network.
There are times when you have so much to say, just so little time.
Excuse me, what?
Good thing there's Twitter. We got you covered with the latest and the most talked about topics. 140 characters at a time. Follow us on Twitter.
A lie is a lie. Just because they write it down and call it history doesn't make it the truth. We live in a world where seeing is not believing. Where only a few know what really happened.
Ready when you are.
In a world where everything you know is wrong.
Director AC, wishing you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and looking forward to an excellent 2011.
This is UF Director Shane. I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, especially to all of those fellow veterans of mine and troops out abroad. I want to thank all of the Urgent Fury family for a great 2010, and look forward to the 2011 with the big announcements we have coming up.
Urgent Frequency.
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny f***ing K. And when Santa squeezes his fat white ass down that chimney tonight, he's going to find the jolliest bunch of assholes this side of the nut house.
A lot has changed in the world since Jay Donovan and Joseph Mesa created Urgent Fury nearly a decade ago. But the one constant, amidst all the change, has been the unique scenarios or stories that have accompanied Urgent Fury's popular TAC map tournament events. With that in mind, the creative team here at Urgent Fury wanted to take the scenario idea to an all-new level. Enter Urgent Fury's epic year-long tournament event, End of Days. Instead of writing a single self-contained story or scenario for every single tournament event, End of Days is a year-long story arc, with each tournament event representing each chapter of the story. Complete with a full cast of characters, the plot of each chapter will be completely connected to the others. Wasting no time, Urgent Fury launched its final tournament event for SOCOM U.S. Navy SEALs Confrontation on the PlayStation 3, and the first in a line of at least a half a dozen chapters slated for the End of Days storyline. Chapter 1. Urgent Fury Cold War. A week and a half into the tournament, at press time, two clans have already been eliminated, two clans find themselves in critical condition, and another leads the whole thing outright. Appropriately enough, ICE sits on top with six territories, with CKS on their heels in the two spot with five territories, a logjam in the three spot as SCK, LPK, and HZ all find themselves knotted up at four territories apiece, while the Screaming Eagles of 101 and WDA bring up the rear at 4 and 5, respectively. For more intel, visit www.urgentfury.com/Cold War. To the Gauntlet mini-tournament for Call of Duty Black Ops. Well, the stage is set to crown a first-ever Gauntlet champion, as only four clans qualified for the postseason. At press time, AL will take on iKill for Fun, while Violent Revolution faces the Uprising, with the winners of each match advancing to the Gauntlet championship match. Good luck and hoo-yah to all the clans deployed. And of course, to honor the Christmas Truce of 1914, Urgent Fury will observe a holiday ceasefire for the Christmas weekend. Stand at ease, shooters. Merry Christmas.
Hey guys, this is Rooster at Urgent Fury, and I just want to wish everyone a happy holiday. Stay safe.
Hey, this is Sergeant Joe Friday with Urgent Fury staff, taking this opportunity to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Hey, this is Willy Wonka from the Skull and Bones Clan. Just want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas and a great New Year from me and the rest of the Skull and Bones. Thank you, and God bless.
Hey, this is your boy Doc from Replay with Doc in Season 1 of The Tester. Happy holidays to all my friends and family overseas, and specifically to the Urgent Frequency community and Commander Fury. Thanks for the bail money.
Woo!
This is Big Money from Clan Blunt Force. Like to give a Merry Christmas to everybody out there in Urgent Fury land. Hope everybody has a good holiday. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Have a good one.
Urgent Frequency.
About 6 months ago, after Urgent Fury's very first trip to E3, we convened a special panel to discuss what was then the current state of the Union of Gaming. We made some predictions and we made a wish list regarding a long list of games that were slated to launch this year. That was in July. Now, here we are in December, and most of the titles we talked about then have now been released, or at least are very close to being released, and we wanted to revisit the state of the Union of Gaming to see what we got right, and maybe more importantly, what they got right. It's always a pleasure for me to talk about gaming with our first guest. He is the brain trust of our little circle of gaming industry insiders. It is Glenn Percival. Sir, thank you so much for being here. I hope you're having a pleasant lead up to Christmas or holiday or solstice or whatever you celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah, I just spent an hour and a half snowblowing, so...
Excuse me?
We have these big machines that swallow up the snow and throw them or blow them across into the neighbor's yard and into the street.
Oh, that's
and I just
awesome.
Spent an hour and a half doing that. Yeah, it was great.
That is awesome, man. The last time I... Never mind. There's a snowballing joke, but I'm not going for it.
Why stop now?
Yeah, why stop now? I've already crossed the line. Also with us, we tried to get the whole gang back together, but Andy was too busy. Well, I called him Andy. Sergeant Joe Friday, he couldn't be here with us. Of course, Doc from the Tester Season 1 was going to try to be here, but I think he's like out saving lives or doing podcasts or whatever he does. But anyway, also with me is... Yeah, I know. He's such an attention whore. Also with us, joining us on the panel tonight, it's a three-man panel. That would be a great name for a band, by the way. It is COO, or no, CIO. I always get this wrong, and I should know it by now, but CIO of Urgent Fury Holdings, LLC. It's the one and the only Shane Bell. You are back in Texas, sir. Is that correct?
That I am, and it's a nice, balming 65 degrees.
Nice, balmy 65. What is it there in the great state of Wisconsin, sir?
Right now, I believe we're actually at 30 degrees, so it's a heat wave right now.
First of all, I got to ask this. Did you have anything to do with the Metrodome caving in the other day? Was that podcast terrorism?
I cannot confirm nor deny, Senator.
I like your answer, sir.
It was Brett Favre's career.
Oh, wow.
You thumb your nose at the football guy. ads long enough, and they're gonna respond. And you want to stay in the NFC North just to stick it to Ted Thompson, and look what happens. Saying.
Hashtag just saying. When last you were here, of course, the reason we're doing this is State of the Union Part 2. I wish CNN would get on that and create a graphic for us. But when last you were here, of course, when we got this panel together last time, we did kind of a State of the Union. We thought, well, man, there's a lot of things going on. It seemed like at the time that there was some volatile stuff going on, especially with developers. The one in question was, when some of the members of Infinity Ward staged a coup and were escorted out of the building with bouncers and stuff. And that was the biggest thing, I guess, that we were wondering, like, how that would turn out. But we had a ton of titles that we talked about that we had all seen at E3. And at the time of this recording, I would imagine that most of those titles have launched or are very close to launching. And we've seen a lot more about all of them. Of course, SOCOM 4, that was the big one we were all just, like, ready for and everything. And SOCOM 4 got pushed back at E3. They assured us, and I'm putting this all on Justin Englert, Tom Regis, if you're listening, you assured us that you would not go back and reverse engineer SOCOM 4 to accommodate the move, which the move in and of itself, we'll talk about that in a second and see where we are with it now that it's out. But SOCOM 4 right now, the last time I checked, is set for a July 2nd, 2011 release. Glenn Percival, digging into your Professor Marvel brain of gaming knowledge, what are the chances SOCOM 4 is in our hands on July 3rd?
I thought it was going to be earlier, actually. from what I was hearing, it was still slated for first quarter, so I don't know if the date you're seeing is still a placeholder or what the deal is, but they've been really vague about it.
Well, I know, and see, I was actually speaking to somebody at Sony about a week ago, and they didn't give me a date, but they kind of said, hey, SOCOM's getting ready to come out. It's exactly the context in which he said it. So in my mind, and I was telling Shane this, hey, that doesn't sound like July. That sounds like... Yeah. But what do you think, man? Do you think that it was a good idea? And of course, that's just speculation that they did have to go back and remap the controls, but I think everybody agrees that's probably what they ended up doing.
I don't think it was just that. I think it was looking at what was coming out this season and did they really want to try to compete with that in a very crowded November. I mean, obviously December is not very crowded, but November was extremely crowded. You know, even before that, you had Medal of Honor, which came in with a lot of buzz, and overall, I still think it was probably one of the better single-player games I've played like that lately. You know, the multiplayer was a little thin and could have used a little bit more content. But then Black Ops, I mean, obviously it was a juggernaut, and do you really want to go up against Black Ops? And, I mean, I think a lot of people answer that the same way, and that is no. You know, you don't want to try to compete with that. I honestly think that was the major reason that they moved it, was just looking at the other stuff that was coming out around that time.
Just a retail strategy.
That's kind of how it sounded. And you know, I've emailed a couple people in PR recently trying to get some new info so we can get some things scheduled for our show. Of course, everybody at Sony's on vacation right now, so they're off until our third. Yeah, so I'm not going to really get any answers. But the last I had heard, it was still slated for first quarter. Now, I mean, you got to be smart about that, though. You know, Killzone 3 was it February 22nd, and you've got Dead Space 2 coming out next month. You've got some other pretty big titles hitting right away in January. So if you look at the release schedule, you can kind of figure out if it's going to be first quarter. You can kind of figure out it's either going to be late January or very early February, but I think, again, that they're going to try to spread those things out a little bit so that we don't have something like last year in March where Sega dumped like four games on us, and I mean, everything came out in March last year.
Cue Zinger music.
Zinger music.
No, I don't have anything queued up. No. I didn't want to bring Dingo and the Baby to this show. I'm trying to keep it higher class.
Dingo and the Baby. Since we alluded to the move, let's talk about that. We might as well go ahead and get that out of the way. Now that we've seen the move, now that we've been bored to death by Kinect, where are we at with where are we at?
Funny. All these hackers are doing such great stuff with Kinect, but the stuff that Microsoft is bringing out on is just total junk.
Are you referring to the Fox article about the extracurricular activity game for Kinect?
Oh, that. Nah, I didn't read that. That's just ridiculous junk. But I mean, you see all these hackers doing the stuff where They almost have an autonomous robot right now, because now it can use the Kinect to do all the, you know, it can read depth and everything else. And then you see Microsoft bring out, like,
Kinect animals
show thing or something. Yeah, Kinectimals, and so you can teach your kid to play with a tiger, so when you go to the zoo, they can jump in. It's just not. I think Move. I'm still not a motion control guy, but there's some stuff on Move that I really like. I think Sports Champions is fantastic, but it's kind of like all the other stuff. You know, you come up with these motion controls and you bring out the sports pack, and it's usually the best thing you have for a while. But high velocity bowling is really cool with Move once you get used to it, because you're so used to the how Wii bowling is. And it sucks, but I mean, a couple of the things that I really love on Move are shooting games. You know, Time Crisis, Raising Storm, and The Shooter, both really good. And, you know, they're light gun games, but at the same time, it's so darn accurate, you know. And today, actually, it's not out yet because the store isn't updated, but Top Darts is hitting today, and I've had it for a few days, and it's really good. Once you get used to it, it's like playing darts at the bar.
Really? So,
it's really neat. It's like, I think it's like $10, and it's really fun. And unfortunately, it doesn't have any online. I think that would have just been
fantastic.
I actually don't understand why it doesn't.
Do you think Microsoft will take a cue from the hackers? I hate to say that, but especially, you know, you look at a game like Little Big Planet, and I'm not a Little Big Planet guy, but I know a bunch of people that are, and we were working on a piece for that, and I was doing some research, and I thought, man, that's pretty innovative to get the community that plays the game to actually, and I think they said that 2.5 million users to this date have created content. Why not do something like that for the Kinect? I mean, if, like you said, if the hackers are already a few steps ahead of the actual developers, I think that as far as motion control goes, I agree with what you're saying. I think that motion control is what it is. Either you like it or you don't. I think they could do so much more with the Kinect. Overall, I feel like that the Move is far and above the leader in motion control right now.
I think the Move just, it is more immersive. I mean, you're actually interacting with something where Kinect, I mean, they've proven it. There's videos out there that a lot of the software, and I was saying this back at E3, a lot of the software out there is built to kind of cheat for you, so that you feel like you're accomplishing something in these games. But yeah, you can go out and out to YouTube, and there's that kid that plays the driving game, which I'm trying to forget the name. So, but it's the kart racer that they did, and he seriously sits there and doesn't move his hands at all, and he still comes in third place in the race. But that's the kind of thing that you see with a lot of, at least the launch titles, you see a lot of that, because it kind of goes to all motion controls to a certain extent, where it's just not precise enough. I mean, when you're playing Mario Kart for the Wii, they had to widen all the tracks, they had to make the turns a lot less, you know, hairpinny, because the motion controls just aren't precise enough. And there's some of that stuff on Move as well, but it's also, you've got some things out there that are so pinpoint accurate that it kind of blows your mind.
Yeah, it's almost too good.
Yeah, there's actually, when I was playing Killzone 3 with Move at PAX, it actually was a little bit too good, because, or actually Mag, I think, was a little bit too good as well, where there was no dead zone at all. And when you were trying to snipe a guy, I mean, it was just impossible to snipe a guy, because every little movement that you made, I mean, it's almost like you have to set yourself up like a real sniper. You know, breathe in, hold it. It felt that way. So,
which is,
you know,
good and bad. Because the whole point of it was for it to be that.
Yeah, I'm almost wondering if that's one of the reasons that they held SOCOM back. Because we had Ben Jones on to talk about the whole Mag 2.0 thing. And we talked to him offline. And we were talking about the Move stuff. And I told him, you know, I played Killzone 3 at PAX with Move. And I had a real problem with it because I kept losing the cursor. Was one problem way back then. And he kind of talked about how they were approaching the Move stuff, not just in Mag, but also in SOCOM 4, and how they always put the blur effect on the reticle, which they don't have on Killzone 3, at least when I saw it at PAX in September. So he kind of went through the process of what they're trying to do, and the things that they were doing to make sure that the Move experience is better than a previous title. And I think that's what it is, even with Kinect. And I mean, we've seen a little bit of it with the Wii, but I think the Wii's kind of hit its technical peak. But the developers just have to learn what to do and how to use this technology. I mean, the technology's there and it works on both sides. It's just, what do you do with it? That's why I'm pretty confident that SOCOM 4 is probably going to be pretty good. Because actually, when I played, you guys played SOCOM 4 with MOVE at E3, it worked.
Oh, yeah.
It worked really well.
I was really surprised, you know, when I first went into it. And again, I am, motion control to me, even my son, he plays the Wii all the time. And even though I'm kind of fascinated by it, like, what was the game for the MOVE, the fight? I saw that and I thought, now that is intelligent use of this technology. But now when I played it with SOCOM 4, the first thing I thought is, man, I'm never going to be able to do this. I am never. And within 3 or 4 minutes of actually, you know, just playing through that level that they had available, about halfway through it, I was like, oh, okay, I see how this is supposed to work. And I actually did catch myself getting into it a little bit more than I would if I would have just been sitting there holding the analog controller. So, yeah, I think it's got a lot of potential. And you know what? Even if, and this is what I've said about SOCOM 4 all along, even if they did push it back to remap or whatever, and Kevin Schmidt totally lied to my face, then I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because I feel like that SOCOM has something to prove. For the first time in its history as a franchise, I really believe that if SOCOM 4 isn't everything that it can be, I feel like that franchise might be in some trouble. And that's just me. I know everybody's saying, well, what about MAG? You know, they got MAG. I don't like that giant environment. I want 16 of my closest friends or whatever it is. Which brings me to another question about shooters. Since we're talking about SOCOM 4, what do you guys think about this whole matchmaking thing versus being able to make your own room, respawn versus... I feel like, you know, I read this article with David Jaffe about Twisted Metal, and one of the features that he is adamant about including in the multiplayer version of the game is when you die, you're dead. And you can't come back. And he said, you know, a lot of people say, well, that just sucks. I don't like sitting in the dead room and blah, blah, blah. But
get better at the game.
Right. Well, and exactly. What he pointed out, it makes, and I've always said this, when you know that when you die, you're dead, it makes your life more valuable. And it makes you think about what you're going to do. And it also makes you work with the other people on your team. How many times now you get into a room that's fully respawn and totally a matchmaking type of thing, and you got people running around. They don't care about you. They don't care about whether or not you're enjoying the game. They just want to get their kill streaks and get their perks and their prestige and all this other crap. I personally think that is something that... And I've heard that SOCOM 4 will be using a matchmaking system. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've read online that they are at least contemplating using a matchmaking system.
Well, I mean, we'll see if they use that and only that, or if they make that just an option. But it's funny that you'd mention that because, you know, we have a very big Battlefield Bad Company 2 contingent at our forums. And, you know, there was a time where we would get on, and this isn't, tooting our own horn or anything, but we would roll through teams, and the entire other side would quit. And this wouldn't just be like one time a night. This was multiple times a night. We got that good as a team. But then other nights, we might have one guy online that's a friend of mine that I'll get on and play with, and my numbers will be worse, our team won't work together, the whole nine. And, you know, that directly proves what you were talking about, where, you know, you get into these, and I think Call of Duty is the perfect example of that. You know, unless you can get in with a party of people, Call of Duty is just Call of Duty. It's every man for himself.
It's controlled chaos, in my opinion.
Yeah. And it's
barely no controlled.
Yeah, barely controlled chaos.
Although I will say Black Ops is better than Modern Warfare 2 in every way.
Wow. Now, see, I didn't see that coming, which I guess that's a perfect segue to, hey, Glenn, what do you think of Call of Duty Black Ops?
I thought the single player was better. I think the multiplayer is a lot more fleshed out, and everything just works better in the multiplayer. Modern Warfare 2 was an absolute mess. There was too much of everything. Nothing was really balanced out right. Technical problems abound. You know, it's... Black Ops, they did a fantastic job, and I still think COD 4 was the best out of the more modern Call of Duty games, but I think Black Ops is definitely very close to COD 4.
Wow. See, I didn't see
that coming. And, of course, they broke their 1 billion mark today.
Yeah, I got that press release, yeah.
See, that really surprises me because I don't know, man. I felt like Modern Warfare 2, to me, as far as a total package. And again, I, you know, in all fairness, I hate every version of multiplayer. I can't even say. I probably haven't played 100 games on COD 4, Modern Warfare 2, and COD Blops, as I like to call it, combined.
Blops.
Yeah. But I bet I haven't played 100 games online with those three games combined, just because I don't like... Going back to, I don't like the whole respawn, and you know, once you do spawn, you
play
get
search and destroy.
You get murdered by some idiot hovering over your head in a Harrier. It's like, oh, that's so much fun. I love getting mowed down as soon as I spawn. But look, I call it, for me, Black Ops is, it, to me, the story is a little confusing. That's one thing I don't like about it. I kind of felt like there were times when I kind of felt like, wait a minute, what's going on? Who am I now? Who am I playing as now? Because and you mentioned Metal of Honor. That's one thing I had. You talked to Matt Pruitt. I had a chance to talk to his buddy Eduardo Vesconcelos a while back. He was telling me that one thing he liked about the single player campaign in Medal of Honor. That's one thing I thought was better than Call of Duty. I thought, you know, I knew.
Oh, I agree.
I knew exactly.
Absolutely.
I knew exactly who I was. I knew exactly where what my mission was. I knew exactly. And I got to say, there were a few times on Call of Duty Black Ops where I kind of felt like, wait a minute, who am I now? What am I doing now? I'm not really sure. Of course, I'm an idiot, so maybe that, you know, that explains some of that. But,
but come on now, you're not an idiot.
Okay. What do you think about the future of the Call of Duty franchise?
I think it's in big trouble.
When you were here last time, again, maybe I should put some kind of clever soundbite, but I'm pretty sure you said that they were basically going to just beat the old horse to death. And do you think that's going to happen?
I definitely think that's going to happen. The rumblings I've heard, especially since we're in the same state and we know some people, Raven Software did a lot of work on Black Ops that was kind of kept secret, and I'm pretty sure Raven Software is going to pretty much be tasked with working on at least one major Call of Duty project, and there's people leaving Raven because there's no creativity anymore. It's a Call of Duty making factory. That's what Activision's going to turn it into.
Call of Duty sweatshop.
It's a baby factory. That's what I keep calling it. It's a baby factory.
Isn't that kind of what happened to Infinity Ward?
Well, exactly. And Activision not to understand that, I think it's foolish. Raven is a great team of people, and they've done some really cool stuff. So, you know, it sucks. They've got a pretty good history there, and you know, there's talks of like a Call of Duty MMO, and which I don't think will ever happen.
A space MMO, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
I read that somewhere. I really did read that somewhere.
So, what else does Activision have anymore? Honestly,
Spider-Man.
That last Spider-Man was really good. I'm still playing it, actually.
What Shattered Dimensions
was really good.
I haven't tried it, but maybe I should pick it up. Who knows? Maybe we'll have Spider-Man Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
If we're nice.
Spider-Man.
Because where I'm going with this is the whole, you put your eggs in one basket, it never works.
Exactly.
Well, okay, we talked about some of the guys left Infinity Ward. Okay, first of all, do you think Infinity Ward will be making the next Call of Duty game?
Well,
by
it might in name.
No. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to keep that name on the studio. And you know, honestly, I can see why they're doing it, because even though Guitar Hero has sucked the last three iterations at least, it still sells like crazy because of the name Guitar Hero. Same way with Infinity Ward. A lot of gamers out there aren't, you know, informed. They don't do podcasts. They don't listen to podcasts. They don't read the magazines or the sites or anything else. They see Infinity Ward on a Call of Duty game, and they're going to buy it.
Must be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll trade it in 2 weeks later.
Exactly. And I'm big money. And I'm trying to keep all of this stuff cohesive here, but now going back to Medal of Honor, we all know that the faction that left Infinity Ward is they are now employed with Electronic Arts. What are the chances that we see those guys take control of an IP like Medal of Honor?
You know, the Medal of Honor series is being done by the same team that's been doing it the whole time. I'm sure it's not all the exact same people, but this is the same studio that's always done that whole series. For Infinity Ward, or for that new team to get, I can't remember what the studio's called anymore, I should know this too.
Respawn?
For them to get Yeah, Respawn Entertainment. For them to get involved, I could see that happening, but they've already said they're working on an all-new IP of their own. So I could see them maybe consulting, but I don't really see them working on it until they get their own game out.
When I talked to Vasconcelos, I got the feeling that DICE, their affiliation, or their obligation, I should say, is probably over with that franchise. Now, he didn't say that. I'm just telling you that's what I got from talking to him, so I don't want to put him on the spot, but that's...
He just did.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, he's no, never going to talk to you again. Hopefully your show's like ours and nobody listens to it.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure that nobody listens to it.
Well, I mean, you talk about DICE a little bit, and I don't think the plan was ever to bring DICE in from the beginning to do the multiplayer. I think that they realized at a certain point in the development cycle that, number one, this game is not going to do well if it's single player only, and number two, this team did not really have a lot of experience building a multiplayer game. I mean, there was some multiplayer in a couple of the Medal of Honors in the past on the PC, but really, to be as fleshed out as it needs to be nowadays to be competitive, they probably just went to DICE and said, listen, we need you. We need somebody to do this. And I think it really is a telling sign when the multiplayer is built in a completely different engine as well. It's built in the Frostbite engine. So I'm hoping that maybe EA has realized that and maybe is building up their own development studio just for that. I mean, I don't...
Just for multiplayer? Respawn,
yeah, I don't think Respawn's actually owned by EA. I think EA is just doing their distribution. Yeah, they're publishing. I might be wrong, though.
Well, you would think they would have learned from their relationship with Activision not to do that.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I know that they own their own IP now, so they don't have to worry about EA ever saying, we own it, screw you!
Now, I know you, like me, are a huge Killzone fan. The whole franchise is just phenomenal, I think. But Killzone 3, from what I've seen, and I know you've played it.
I am extremely excited. Actually, our new episode for PlayStation Home is going up tomorrow as of this recording, and a major portion of that is Killzone 3, the beta. We got special permission to show footage of that. Split screen is confirmed. It's running at a very smooth frame rate split screen for on-the-couch co-op. I haven't really gotten word on online co-op yet, so I think it's going to work, but I haven't heard anything, so don't quote me.
I just did.
I don't know for sure. I've asked, and they haven't answered me. So, you know, they've listened to a lot of people, and they've really heeded that call. I mean, a lot of things that people were worried about from Killzone 2, they've definitely addressed in Killzone 3 with balance, and... at the same time, bringing some new innovations, you know, the jetpacks and the exoskeletons or the mechs. There are truly, truly some epic battles coming in this game. I think you're going to see a much better level design. I think you're going to see a level design that's more open and not just taking you down a hallway all the time. You know, you've got essentially the same graphics engine they had before, but definitely improved in every way. A more solid frame rate, even an online. A lot more effects going on, including like volumetric fog, smoke, that kind of thing. And it literally picks up exactly where Killzone 2 leaves off at the end. So I can't be more excited. I just can't wait to play the full game and dig my teeth into this. So unfortunately, we don't have a debug, so I don't have the build that's out right now. And I'm crying a little bit inside.
Well, so and for those who have, if there are folks out there who have not played any of the Killzones, please do, because you say, well, I'm not into those futuristic, because I'm not. I have never been one of those guys. I never liked Halo. I never liked the futuristic games. But the thing about Killzone, and you can disagree or agree with me here, but the thing about Killzone is, even though it is futuristic, and even though it is kind of like a sci-fi shooter, it feels, I'm talking about the weapons, I'm talking about the environment, yeah. Everything feels like a very traditional shooter. Like the physics of the weapons don't feel like you're shooting a laser gun. You feel like you're actually firing rounds. The environments react and act just like they would if you were running through the burning rubble of some French town in World War II. I mean, it has that... and I think that's something they've always tried to create, is kind of like a... I think the Helgen army or whatever. I think they kind of base that on kind of like a Nazi Germany type of thing, and you've always been kind of like the resistance or the allies or something like that. And of course, I'm getting a little philosophical, but don't you agree that even though it's a sci-fi shooter, it feels very much like a traditional shooter?
Yeah, for the most part, it does feel very World War II-ish. You know, you have real bullets. You don't have all these laser guns and pew-pew, you know. It's everything has this weight to it. Even though you're flying through the air on these hovercraft or whatever, it's still kind of this Omaha Beach feeling at certain points. And, you know, toward the end, yeah, you get the electric gun and a few more futuristic-type things, but... I mean, definitely. I mean, your sidearm is a frickin' revolver. It's a six-shot revolver. But they have all these other elements. So it's a great blend, and I think that's one of the reasons I really like the game. If you haven't played them before, I would really suggest not even trying Killzone 2, though. Not trying Killzone. Killzone 2 is where you should start, but if you want to know the backstory, there is a Killzone Liberation on PSP that's between 1 and 2. That is actually a really good game, but there's a great website out there, and I think you can just Google it, but it tells the entire history of the Killzone universe and where it's up to this point. But I strongly suggest Killzone 2 because the mechanics are great. It's just a blast to play all the way through, and the story is actually pretty good for, you know, just an all-out shooter. And there's definitely a holy crap moment at the end of the game too. So, and also if you're planning on playing Killzone 3, you definitely want to play through 2 since, like I said, 3 picks up exactly where 2 leaves off. So it's literally that close together, too. It's pretty funny.
You'll feel vested. You'll feel more vested in the story if you understand why you're where you're at, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But I like what they've done, though, where, I mean, yes, you're right. They've definitely kind of modeled some things about the Hellgun after Nazis. I mean, even some of the logos and everything else they use. But at the same time, the way the story goes, it kind of takes both sides and puts them in this gray area at times. And that's the nice thing about knowing kind of the backstory of what all has taken place, because the Terrans have kind of done some things that could be considered pretty low down and dirty, but at the same time, the Hellgun can be seen as someone that kind of went against their word and that kind of thing. And, you know, the new locales that are going to be introduced in Killzone 3 are going to be pretty mind-blowing. The first time you play with a jetpack and it actually works, like you can actually control it and everything, you're going to fall in love.
Well, I heard that the multiplayer maps are, and this is just something I read, I think. This might have been on the wiki that you were maybe alluding to a second ago. But it was talking about how the maps are almost 5 times bigger than any multiplayer map they've had to date. Everything I've seen on Killzone 3 seems like that finally Guerrilla says, okay, we're going to push this machine. We're going to push this processor, yeah, and we're going to see what we can really get out of it. Would you agree that maybe this is the first of the three games that they've really wanted to push the machine to its limits?
I think Killzone 2 did in certain ways. They used a lot of effects that they never used in the past, and there are actually in Killzone 2 some pretty big maps. What you're seeing with Killzone 3, I mean, there is a small map. The one in the beta with the mechs was actually quite small map, but you look at the dam level, and it's humongous. And just in terms of scale, I think that's really where they're adding things, where there's so much going on that level with the dam, where you're at the foot of the dam. It could take you almost 15 minutes just to walk all the way around the perimeter of the entire map.
Wow.
It was that big.
Jeez. So,
yeah, well, I mean, that's going through every building and everything else, and it's...
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's so cool, and at the same time, they keep all the players together enough where it doesn't get like you're running 5 minutes to find one guy to shoot.
Thank God.
So the mechanics that they use to do all that is very interesting when you really kind of sit back and look at what they've done, and the variety of gameplay just in one single map, where it changes 2 or 3 times because you're going from open environment, you know, this huge open field of snow and all these broken up pipes, to the smaller industrial complex that's on the other side of the map, to with catwalks and all these twisting and turning hallways, to the buildings that are kind of at the foot of this dam that are all kind of an industrial complex as well, but a little more open and free, but also with multiple levels. And to see that they're doing that kind of a design is pretty interesting stuff, and I definitely can't wait to see all of them.
That brings us, I guess, to Gran Turismo 5, man. I know that you're playing it. You low down dog sucker, you, because I haven't got a chance to play anything new except for Call of Duty. But GT5, man, let's go ahead and put GT5 and Need for Speed on the table here, because I think those are the two games that are really, for the first time in a long time, I've heard people saying that Need for Speed graphically is right in the same neighborhood as Gran Turismo 5, which they've basically set the bar for photorealistic racing. But Doc and I, he was here, I guess, on the last episode, and we talked a little bit about GT5 and Need for Speed. His take was that they both look phenomenal, but they're still so different. GT5 is more about style. Need for Speed is obviously more about the speed of the game. What have you played either game? Both? I know you played GT5, but
I've got both of them.
Okay, what do you think of both games?
I think you need to look past just how they look. You know, when you go to Gran Turismo 5, it looks that good, and it's got the full physics engine. It's got everything else going on where it's reacting to the wind. It's reacting to any little thing. Need for Speed is a little bit flashier. You know, it's using a modified version of the Burnout Paradise engine, which, let's face it, Burnout Paradise is one of the best-looking games on any console.
I agree.
For a long time. Also, there's a lot less cars in Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, so obviously they've taken some more time to work on those, but I mean, it looks flashier. It you know, the lighting is all kind of overdone, and it's a great game, though. Need for Speed Hot Pursuit is probably my favorite Need for Speed game in the last probably 10 years.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, they've taken it back to the basics of what the series was all about. You can play as the cop or as a racer. You know, the action gets broken up enough by going to the different missions. They've done a fantastic job, and they've got all these, you know, really rare exotic cars in the game that you play. You know, you can bash them up and everything else. You're using a Maserati for a cop car. How cool is that?
That is pretty cool.
You know,
and you don't have to go to the garage and buy it. You
exactly.
Just earn it.
Open them up.
You know?
Yeah. You know, I used that same Maserati Gran Turismo S 2008 in Gran Turismo last night, and it controls completely different. I love it in Gran Turismo 5. I think it's one of the better cars I've got right now. But it plays very different. You're not really dealing with a lot of physics when you're playing Need for Speed. But it's a great game, but they're so different. I mean, you've got an all-out balls-nasty racing game that's all about speed and trying to bash guys into the wall and shooting EMPs at them and calling roadblocks up. And then you've got GT5, which is a total simulation, but it's got the little whimsical stuff like the go-karts and that kind of thing. I've been playing this game since, three, 4 days before it came out, and I still haven't scratched the surface of a lot of things in this game. And this new patch that just came out, holy crap, did it add a lot of stuff. Full XP and reward system for online. They fixed a lot of stuff. They fixed the shadows a little bit, apparently. I mean, there's still little buggy things in GT5, but
I've heard rumors of terrible load times, though. Can you confirm or
the load times are what you would expect from a Gran Turismo. I mean, I put in GT4 because I wanted to do comparison to GT4 and GT5, and number one, do the install. It's like 8 gig, but do the install. It makes
Absolutely.
A huge difference.
Yep.
Sure, it takes 50 minutes. Oh, no. That's the reason you have a hard drive, is so you can install stuff to it, and it works better. The load times, I don't really think are that bad. I mean, they're long, but they're not...
They're faster than SOCOM.
Well, yeah.
If you want to set a bar, it is faster than going into a map on SOCOM Confrontation.
Yeah. So I really, you know, a lot of the complaints out there for GT5 I just don't see. I think they're being insanely nitpicky. I mean, even sometimes when they talk about the graphics, you really only can see it when you pause, you know? So I'm blown away by GT5. It's way better than I expected it to be. I'm getting a 3D TV. I almost picked one up last week, and they were out of them.
Oh, you don't have one yet?
I'm getting one for this game.
So you're getting a 3D TV specifically for this game?
Well, I'm getting it for games in general, but, I mean, I play GT5 in 3D, and it made a huge difference in how you
Absolutely.
Play it. I mean, you can see all the corners coming up easier. I mean, everything about it that sold me on 3D was that.
The side view mirrors work.
Oh, man. Yeah. I just remember back, and Josh and I were playing it at E3 and then 3D, and both of us came up to a corner, and both of us at the same time, I could hear him, and we're like, whoa! Because you could actually see the corners, and you could gauge it correctly on what lane you wanted to bring in, you know, and how you just wanted to handle it. And all of a sudden, this car zipped in front of me, and it had a wing in the back, and the wing adjusted. So if you slow down, it actually goes down, and it did it right in front of me in 3D. I was like, holy crap. It just it blew my mind. So, and Killzone 3 in 3D was pretty darn epic. Nice, too.
See, I didn't get to play anything that dynamic. I played MLB 10, the show, in 3D, and I thought it was pretty phenomenal. So I could imagine.
That was just slapped onto the demo.
Yeah.
And wait until you see 11.
Yeah, so I could just imagine what it must be like barreling down the road at like 900 miles an hour. We've covered most of the games that we talked about, most of the things that we talked about.
I was hoping you were going to seg into 3D gaming.
I thought it was a gimmick, and it wasn't really going to catch on, but man, nowadays they don't even make a film without first exploring the 3D possibilities. You know, I'm waiting to see Gone with the Wind in 3D or something. So,
well, yeah, films are still really hit and miss. I mean, there's some where it's so obvious, you know, the stuff just comes right into the screen and floats in front of you. And I'm not getting it. My primary reason for getting 3D right now is games. Secondary is movies on Blu-ray, and then third is TV. But I kept saying last year it was kind of a gimmick as well. But now seeing all the support it's getting, not just from Sony, but from companies like EA, that tells me that this is something that's going to catch on and is something that's going to be supported for a while on the PS3 especially, and I feel more confident about getting it because it works. I mean, I'm looking forward to playing a lot of this stuff. So we saw Tron in 3D. We went down to the store and I said, you have one of these in stock? And the dude that was working there, he's like, I don't know.
Okay, guys, let's wrap up the Consumer Digest here. with the holidays here, really quick, give us a handful of games that we can turn our little gamers on to. Some stocking stuffer games.
Dead Nation on PSN is without a doubt one of my favorites of the year. You're going to be able to find some older games for a little bit cheaper. Uncharted 2, which you definitely need to play. Gosh, so many PSP games. East, The Oath and Fel'Ghana, which is fantastic. Man, there's some other PSN stuff like, well, it's on the other systems too, but the X-Men arcade game just came out. That's awesome. You got the Battlefield Bad Company 2 Vietnam coming out any minute here. We're sitting here patiently waiting for it to update, which I can't wait for. I just hit 50 on Black Ops. I'm not going to Prestige because there's just no reason to. So I'm going back to Battlefield. Wow. You know, you can probably find Medal of Honor a little bit cheaper. I like you guys said, I think it's one of the best first-person shooter single-player games I played all year.
It's a little short, but I agree with that.
Yeah, I just think it was so well-scripted, and the highs and lows were just really well put together, and the pacing was right on, mostly. It was really good. Pick up some move stuff. Sports Champions is a blast as a group. We've played it multiple times with a lot of people, and it's a great time. If you have the Rock Band stuff, my God, Rock Band 3 is a great game. We've spent so much time on Rock Band 3.
I know from just watching my family and their friends, and we have friends over and stuff, and like you said, it's just a fun night of nobody. There's no pressure. You're not worrying about your score, really, or anything like that. It's just a bunch of people getting together, enjoying some songs that are familiar to them. I was thinking maybe Sly Cooper Collection. I think that's a great deal.
Oh, man. That is a fantastic collection. Three great games on the PS2, redone in 720p, full 60 frames per second, 3D support. The Move support is all these mini games. Don't buy it for that. They're great games. And for $40, I mean, and full trophy support if you're into that. So there's three platinums on the disc. I can't think of a better deal, honestly. This was definitely the year for the independent game, too. You know, stuff like Auditorium HD and Joe Danger. And, well, there's one coming out pretty soon called Slam Bolt Scrappers. A lot of independent stuff that has really been awesome. And
which is good to see. I think that's good to see.
Yeah. And it was great to see NBA Jam make a comeback. And it's such a good comeback.
You just like the big heads, don't you?
I'm an NBA Jam fanatic. I was a tester on the SNES and Genesis one. So I'm a fanatic of the series. And I actually own an NBA Maximum Hangtime arcade system. So,
oh, wow.
I'm big into that series, yeah. PS3 one's great.
So, Shane, what about you, man? Let's hear your picks for winners and losers.
Well, for winners, Red Dead Redemption was absolutely fantastic. That was just a shock. Grand Theft Auto on a horse. I mean, it couldn't get any better. Followed by, I agree, Medal of Honor was by far the best shooter that's come out this year, in my opinion. Even with all of its flaws with us and multiplayer, that's my pick for the shooter. And then Gran Turismo, absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
I'm addicted to the game, seriously. I'm staring at my steering wheel right now. My steering wheel going, I want to play this game.
He's going to be on Celebrity Rehab.
Yeah, with Sebastian Bach.
That would be awesome.
Also, for the holiday picks, believe it or not, I actually think one of the best things you can do right now is go get a $50 PlayStation Store card and put it in a stocking. There is so much stuff to do on the PlayStation Store that's just, I mean, any family can just be good and not even have to actually buy a disc. There's so much stuff to buy on the store. And then, for family games, the Family Game Night, Hasbro Family Game Night, is absolutely great.
I've heard that. I've heard that's exceptional fun on the Wii.
Sure. I don't know what a Wii is.
Roger that. You know, they've got all those games available, too, like the Family Feud and the Price is Right and Jeopardy and all that stuff. I totally
Pressure
agree.
Luck.
I totally agree.
No whammies.
Glenn, speaking of PlayStation Network, I know that folks out there can mosey on over to the community theater and check you guys out. What do you got going on at the community theater right now?
Well, we were kind of away for a little while because we had different stuff going on, but actually tomorrow on the 22nd, the new episode will be going up. It's Dead Nation, a smaller game, independent game called Horde, and of course Killzone 3. And then if you stay for the whole thing, you actually get one of our Trophies Yo PlayStation Home t-shirts.
Wow.
As one of the rewards. So they're pretty cool, actually. It's pretty neat that they have those.
Seem like they just love you guys to death, and why not? What about the podcast?
Oh, God. we're at episode 196 this week. 200 will be next month.
Wow.
I think one of our listeners, one of our really good friends, Dane Crackerjack, he is having a housewarming party, and I think it's the same weekend as our 200th show was supposed to be, so we're trying to figure some stuff out.
Oh, so
you're going to host it from his housewarming party?
I started to say, are you going to try to do something special?
That'd be a good idea. Because I think all their other non-gamer friends would show up and go, what is up with all these nerds and their microphones?
And their inhalers. Glenn Percival, psnation.org. Get on over there and check them out. And of course, you can follow them on Twitter at
@PS3Nation. And then my two co-hosts are out there too, at @5SpotJoel and at @PJFJosh.
Are they all going to join us for E3, or are we going to have Popsicle Buddies again?
It sounds like all three of us are going to be at E3, and we're going to be bringing our writers this year too. So we've got our writers like Bill and Ray and Justin are going to be joining us at E3. So it's going to be a packed house this time. Maybe figure out your rent-a-car stuff beforehand this time.
That's what I'm saying. But anyway, Glenn, man, as usual, dude, like I said, you are the brain trust, and I told you this the other night on the phone. A guy by the name of Roger Blakemore was the guy who taught me a lot about radio and stuff like that, and he told me, he said, if you ever get a good guest, get their phone number. That's why I keep coming back to you, sir. You are a wealth of information, and I know you're really connected, and I really appreciate you coming by. Please have a very Merry Christmas and happy holidays. And
thanks. You too, guys. And you guys are doing a great job over there as well. And we try to pimp you whenever we can. So hopefully that helps out in any way.
Well,
with the five people we have listening to our show.
Like I said, continued success. Shane, thank you very much. Not that you had anything special going on, but thank you for being here. And
well, also I got to thank Patrick real quick before you hit stop.
Okay.
You start out every episode. We have to use it.
Just because we have to, and we don't.
No, I want to come. I want to actually have you do more of them because you do such a great job.
Thank you. I'll get my reading glasses. I don't need glasses, but I like wearing the reading glasses. It makes me feel like Don LaFontaine when I wear them. But
direct all inquiries to Shane at UrgentFury.com.
Yeah, he's my agent. But anyway. Thank you both for being here. As for all of you frequency freaks out there, thank you so much for another year of your love and your support, including everything you do to keep Urgent Frequency and Urgent Fury growing. And we do have some very cool things coming up in 2011. So sit back, just sit back, relax, make yourself at home. Would you like something to drink? A sandwich, perhaps?
As usual, you can send your questions, comments, and or suggestions to me at CommanderFury@UrgentFury.com. Network with us via the Urgent Fury Gaming League, Twitter, on the official Urgent Fury blog, Urgent Fury Unleashed, on Facebook, and on our brand new YouTube channel at youtube.com/UFreakTV. This episode of Urgent Frequency was produced by Urgent Fury Holdings, LLC, and here in the studio by Allison Armstrong and Santa and his elves, and is dedicated to the memory of my friend, Sergeant Delmer White, KIA, Operation Enduring Freedom, as well as the men and women of our armed forces and the first responders out there. Look, just because some folks have forgotten about you this Christmas, I haven't and never will. Hoo-yah. I'll leave you with the Cheech and Chong classic, Santa and His Old Lady. I challenge each and every person within the sound of my voice to be good. Keep your feet wet and your powder dry. Merry Christmas. Hoo-yah.
Mama, mamacita, donde está Santa Claus? The vato with a bony knees, he's coming down the street with no shoes on his feet, and he's going to... No, that ain't it. Mama, mamacita, donde está Santa Claus? The guy with the hair on his jaws, he... Hey, man, come over here, man. I need some help, man.
Yeah, man, I can dig that. What are you doing, man?
I'm trying to write a song about Santa Claus, man, but it's not coming
about
out.
About who, man?
About Santa Claus, man. You know, Santa Claus,
oh,
man.
Oh, yeah, man. I played with those dudes, man.
What?
Yeah, last year at the Fillmore, man. Me and the bass player sat in, man.
Oh, hey, man, you think Santa Claus is a groove, huh? No, it's not a groove, man.
Would they break up, man?
Oh, no, man, it's one guy, man. You know, he had a red suit on, man, with black patent leather shoes. You know that guy, man?
Oh, yeah. He's with Motown, ain't he?
No, man.
Yeah,
he's
with that dude, too. Man.
No.
Yeah, he's a good singer, man.
No, hold on, man. He's not with Motown, man.
Well, then he's with Buddha, man.
No. Oh, man, you don't know who Santa Claus is, man.
Yeah, no, I'm not from here, man. I'm from Pittsburgh, man. I don't know too many local dudes.
Oh, I see. Well, hey, man, sit back and relax, and I'll tell you the story about Santa Claus, man. Listen. Once upon a time, about 5 years ago, there was this groovy dude, and his name was Santa Claus, you know? And he used to live over in the projects with his old lady. And they had a pretty good thing together because his old lady was really fine, and she could cook and all that stuff like that, you know? Like, she made the best brownies in town, man. Oh, I could remember them now, man. I could eat one of them, man.
Wow, did you know these people, man?
Oh, yeah, man. They used to live next door to me, you know, until they got kicked out, man.
What, they got kicked out of the projects, man?
Yeah, you know what happened, man? They used to live with all these midgets, you know? And the midgets used to make a lot of noise, you know, like pounding and hammering and pounding all night, man.
Well, typical freaks.
Oh, yeah, man, they were really freaks, man. As a matter of fact, they all moved up north together, you know?
Well, they have to go get their head together, man.
Yeah, get their head together, man. And they started a commune, you know? It was called the Santa Claus and His Old Lady commune. It was a real famous one up there, man. And they used to sit around and groove all the time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Really good time, man.
Yeah, they used
to eat the brownies, man. They drink the tea, man. And what they did most of the time, though, was make a lot of goodies, you know? And they had everything they needed. They only needed to come into town maybe once a year or something like that.
Pick up the welfare check and the food stamp.
Yeah, man. No, what they did, man, is once a year, when they made all the goodies, you know, they used to put them in a big chopping bag, and then they used to take the chopping bag and deliver them to all the boys and girls all the way around the world, man.
Hey, well, that's it, man.
Yeah,
that sounds real nice.
Oh, yeah, they were really nice people. And so much class, man, they had so much class, you know, like even take the way they used to deliver the toys, you know. It's like Santa Claus used to have this really sharp short, man, you know. It was lowered to the ground at twice pipes, candy apple red, and button tuck, ooh, clean.
That sounds like a hip snowmobile, man.
No, it wasn't a snowmobile, it was a sled, you know. One of those big sleds, you know. And he used to have it pulled by some reindeers, you know, like reindeers.
Some what, man?
Some reindeers, you know. He used to hook them onto the sled, and then he used to stand up inside the sled and hold onto the reins, and then call out their names, like, on Donner, on Blissen, on Chewy, on Tavo, come on, Beto. And then the reindeers used to take off into the sky and fly across the sky, man.
Wow. man, that's far out, man.
Yeah, and then when they fly across the sky, they used to come down to places like Chicago, LA, Nueva York, and Pacoima, and all those places, you know, and then land on top of people's roofs, and then old Santa Claus would make himself real small, you know, like a real small guy, and he'd come down the chimney, and then he would give you all the stuff that he made, man, and dig this, man, he did it all in one night, man.
Hey, just a minute, man, now how'd he do that, man?
Oh, well, man, he took the freeway. How else, man?
No, man. How did he do all that other stuff, man? Like, how'd he make himself small, man? And how'd he get the reindeer off the ground, man?
Oh, well, man, he had some magic dust, man.
Some magic dust?
Yeah, magic dust. You know, he used to give a little bit to the reindeer, a little bit to Santa Claus, a little bit more for Santa Claus, a little bit more.
And this would get the reindeer off, man?
Oh, got 'em off, man. Are you kidding, man? They flew all the way around the world, man.
Hey, that's far out, man. Hey, how come I've never met this dude, man?
Oh, man, he doesn't do that bit anymore, man. It got too dangerous, man.
Yeah, I can dig that, man, because that's a dangerous bit, man.
Yeah, let me tell you, it sure was, man. Like, just 2 years ago, man, he got stopped at the border, you know, and they took him into another room and took off his clothes, man, and searched him and searched his bag of goodies, man. And then when he was leaving, man, he was flying through the air, somebody took a shot at his reindeer, you know?
Oh, that's a drag.
Yeah, man. It really was, man. And then, man, he went down south, man, and they tried to cut off his hair and his beard, man. And all the time he was getting stopped and pulled over and asked for his ID, man. Just everywhere he went, he ran into too much recession, man.
No, man, you mean he ran into too much repression, man.
Repression, recession, man. It's all the same thing, man.
Yeah, man. It's a drag, man, because we could sure use a dude like that right now.
You know, oh, well, he still comes around, man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but he comes in disguises now.
Oh, he went underground.
Yeah, underground, man.
I can dig it.
Yeah, but you want to see his disguise, man. Nobody would ever know it was him, man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's got a job in front of the department store ringing this bell.
I seen the dude.
Yeah, man. You know who I'm talking about,
yeah, man.
Yeah.
I played with that guy last year, man.
What?
Yeah, we played in front of a store, man. We made a lot of
money. Oh, hey, wait a minute, man. Santa Claus is not a musician, man.
I'm hip, man. That cat didn't know any tunes, man.
Oh, wait a minute, man. No, he's not into that at all, man.
No, I played with this dude.
Are you sure, man?
D-I-N-G-O.
Dingo!
Dingo!